I wish I had Skittles.
Are you out?
Mm-hmm. I only had one bag and I ate them all during episode, what, six?
During an episode.
Yes, really during.
It's in the best podcast practices handbook. It's not really. Has Miss Skittles called you yet?
Not yet. That's why I'm mentioning it again right now. Eat Skittles and make people listen to you talk.
Hi, and welcome to Hey Bestie. We're best friends, Sarah and Kim, and we're introverts who like to talk.
I feel very lucky to be here right now, Sarah, because I have been in peril a couple of times recently at work.
What?
As you know, I work at a university, so my job involves parking at a parking garage and walking across a campus to get to my building every day.
Yes.
Twice in the last 3 weeks, I have been attacked by a bird. I don't know if it's...
Wait, the same bird?
I don't know if it's the same bird. It might be a different
type
bird.
Of bird. So is there a chance it's the same bird?
It's the same type of bird. And I have now, I think I've figured out the problem. But walking to my car, I walk past this row of trees. And now I'm like terrified to do that. I feel very nervous when I go by this row of trees now.
The bird senses it and it's waiting for you.
I feel like it is.
Damn it, Trevor. The bird's name is Trevor.
So Trevor the bird was sitting on this branch and I was on the phone with my brother and I was leaving my office and it flew very close by my head. And I just thought, oh, that's just like a fluke that kind of like made my heart jump. But
were you on the phone the next time too and the bird is anti-technology?
No, I wasn't. And that's what I thought it was. I thought maybe okay. This bird is like my phone because it did it two more times. And I was on the phone with my brother and I was like, I'm sorry, we have to stop our conversation. This bird is flying by my head. And I felt its wing on the back of my head the second time.
Oh my gosh.
And I started...
That's close.
It's too close for comfort, that's for sure.
Oh.
So I sped up. I started walking much faster to get away from this bird, to get away from Trevor, who clearly did not
the bird loved
there.
It. Trevor was loving it.
I am an idiot. So not only is he like a jerk bird that attacks people, but he also enjoys it as a pastime.
I mean, I feel like that's the only reason he does it.
You're really building this like solid Trevor narrative. So as a PSA, if you know any birds that look like a Trevor... I would steer clear.
So, but Trevor did it again another time when you weren't on the phone?
Yes, it happened another time when I wasn't on the phone. I had to pause my conversation with my brother. It buzzed by me and I felt its wing one time, three times when I was on the phone walking that day. And
it was really targeting you.
I tried to think about like, what kind of bird is that? Is it like the kind of bird? Are they aggressive? But I don't know anything about birds. I don't know anything about birds or trees. Like being outside, I'm just like, tree,
if it was
bird.
A raven or like a crow, you should be terrified.
It wasn't because
those things are organizing your death.
Yeah. Or like a grackle, which we have everywhere here, like those blackbirds. It wasn't black. It was like kind of brownish and it had a little bit of markings on it, which I know what a blue jay looks like. And I can identify a cardinal because like blue and red. But this bird was just kind of brownish and just looked like a bird. But it wasn't anything that...
Generic bird.
Yeah. I mean,
Trevor.
That's as far as I got. I tried to do a little bit of Googling, but I got bored within like 30 seconds and stopped. So I just like didn't know. It was just Trevor. The second time that it happened, I wasn't on the phone and I was just walking and I heard this flapping and then I felt the wind by my ear again and I knew that a bird was flying really close to my head again and of course it freaked me out.
Oh my God.
So I started walking faster again and then it happened again and it was squawking in my direction. Like it was actually squawking at me and flying at me. And so I was like, what is going on? And I felt like it was like one of those moments where like you want somebody around, because the first time I was on the phone with my brother, so I could tell him like what was happening. And it felt like, you know, cathartic.
Yeah.
To like tell somebody, you know, if this is the last time anyone ever hears from me, this is what's going on.
This bird is after me.
But this time there was like no one around and I didn't know what to do. And it was just like one of those moments where you feel like I have to tell someone. So I'm like looking around, but there's nobody there. So it just felt all the more, I felt very alone. Like just me and this, me and Trevor. I just felt like I didn't know what to do. So I again tried to Google it, like aggressive birds or what's going on. And I found something that somebody in response to someone saying that they experienced the same thing. And it was somebody that said that colors like really trigger birds a lot. And the phone thing was a thing. Like when you were saying like maybe it was your phone, like they do respond to signals sometimes or magnetic fields at certain points. But like I said, the second time I wasn't on my phone. And my phone was like put away in my backpack. I think it was my backpack though, because my backpack.
Oh, Trevor doesn't like
your backpack. No, my
backpack is red. And Trevor has bull DNA.
Bull DNA. Trevor enjoys almost attacking innocent people who are walking around and also has bull DNA. He's a genetically modified...
Can you tell I've been watching Zoo this summer? These animals are just like all crossed up. Everything's mixed around. They've got tendencies of the wrong animal. They're going after
you. Oh my gosh, I'm living in real life Zoo. That's not good.
Yeah.
If you want your life to be a show, Zoo is not the one.
No, Zoo is not the one. Well, if it makes you feel any better, I once had a squirrel that used to throw stuff at me from the tree above my driveway.
Throw stuff at you? Like a wrench?
Yeah, like, I first I thought, like, oh, just random crap from the tree, like acorns or like a pine cone. It would hit me in the head.
Wow, he has really good aim.
Yeah, so like, of course, that happens once and you think, like, okay, well, that's something just dropped out of the tree. Then it happens and you look up and you see a squirrel there and you think, oh, they just dropped it. But then it happened so many times that I can't really think of any other explanation other than the squirrel was definitely just throwing it at me. Yeah, he's gone now, so.
Well, I hope this bird goes away. I changed up my route.
You changed your route because of a bird. That is amazing.
I walk a different way now so I don't go by Trevor's tree.
I mean, hey, I think all women have a story about changing their route after being harassed in a certain area. Just usually not about a bird.
I mean, that's what you do, right? You change your route. You try to just avoid it because you know that this dude isn't going to change his behavior.
Oh my gosh. Trevor.
Yeah, so I try to walk a safer route now.
I love it.
So last week we talked about some animals that aren't so dangerous and nicer to be around, presidential pets, but it got me thinking about some animals that I've actually wanted to be around that haven't tried to attack me. I was remembering the last time I had a dog because recently I've been really, really dog crazy. And I have to say, if you post a lot about your dog on Instagram or your dog has an Instagram and I follow it, if your dog dies, I am totally okay with you never sharing that information and just continuing to post pictures of your dog.
Oh my gosh. One of my Instagram beagles died recently.
Oh no. See, and it's just,
And it was a beagle that lived in Amsterdam. And so I was so like, you know, recognizing the spots around town that I'd been to and thinking about my beagle that lived there. And then the beagle in Amsterdam died recently. And it was so sad. They haven't posted since they announced that he died. Oh. But oh my gosh.
Yeah, you get so attached. And I feel like lately I've really, I like checking in on the pets that I follow online because it's just a nice break from all of the horrible news and the anxiety around politics right now. It's really become part of my daily routine that makes me feel good for a change. So I checked in on a dog that I follow on Instagram recently too, and it had died. And I got so sad. Oh, no. And I'm just like, but if you have a dog and you post a lot about your dog, I'm totally willing to believe that your dog is like 37 years old. It's fine. I will delude myself till the end of time. If you don't feel like telling people, if you do need to tell people, that's fine. And we'll all be sad with you. But if you don't want to tell anybody, that's fine too. But I started thinking about how much animals can really get you through such a hard time. And I've had times, I don't live in a place right now that's conducive to owning a pet. But right now, like we can't have a dog, but we really want to have a dog eventually. And I find myself lately though, wishing that I had a dog because I feel like that would really be like a kind of like therapy moment that I can have in my day when I'm like hanging out with my dog or being able to like pet my dog or just have somebody in my house that isn't aware of what's going on and is just kind of like living life and sort of like that stable presence.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I was thinking about when my parents got divorced, I was like 9 years old. So I remember my dog being a really, really important presence in my life during that time. And like, I felt like my dog knew what was going on in my house, but was also just kind of like there for me. And we didn't have to like talk about it, obviously, because my dog wasn't like talking to me about anything at all ever. So we didn't have to talk about what was going on. And it was like the only person that lived with me that like didn't say anything about the divorce or all the stressful stuff that was going on. And we could just like hang out. And I still remember like her kind of being, I mean, it feels like she really saved me in a lot of ways, like during that time.
Yeah.
And we did have this special bond that started because I think she was there for me in a way that nobody else was, like human or otherwise, during that time in my life. Yeah. So I just have really fond memories of her. And she was kind of a terrible animal, like in general. Like her behavior wasn't terrible, but she was a dog that my dad got from somebody that he worked with that had a dog that had puppies. Mm-hmm. This dog probably should not have had puppies. And so we ended up with this smallish, scruffy, weird looking terrier dog that was kind of like had some medical issues like right out of the gate and was sort of difficult to take care of at times. So in that way, like she wasn't like the best pet ever because she was kind of high maintenance and just like not, she didn't do any of like the standard dog things. She didn't really learn commands, but she also wasn't terrible. Like she wasn't biting anybody or jumping up on people. She didn't go to the bathroom in the house or have any of those like classic behavior issues. But in general, she wasn't like also like classic awesome dog pet. But she was my friend. And that's what I remember about her is that she was my friend. more and more, especially this year, I like really, really want to like have a pet, even though I know like getting a pet is like a huge commitment and we would have to make sure that we had like the means to take care of a pet and be around for a pet. But I feel like the trade-off is it's such a big payoff in the end, like what you're getting out of it, like having that animal that's...
Yeah, for sure. It's a lot of work and it can cost a lot of money and all of that, yeah. But you get a lot back from it. Yeah, I had a dog growing up that was similarly important to me just through tough times in my house whenever I was a kid. And then in my 20s, I adopted a beagle who you knew very well.
the best beagle.
He was like, I don't know, he saw some shit with me, I'll just say that. And then he moved to the Netherlands with me and back. So
yeah, y'all went through a lot.
Yeah, whenever we immigrated, first of all, it was easier for him than it was for me. So I guess that's good for him. Even though, like you said, you couldn't talk to your dog, like your dog doesn't talk to you. It was just nice to be in a foreign place with like a fellow American. Mm-hmm. I don't know. He was still an American dog because Dutch people would try to talk to him with like traditional Dutch, like, or traditional dog kind of words. And he wouldn't know because he didn't speak Dutch. So like they might say something that you would expect the dog to know about. No, sit, stay, all that. But in Dutch, and he wouldn't know, and so he, like, wouldn't do it. But if you said it in English, he would do it because he's American, so he knew it. To me, he just felt like this is an American dog who's also a foreigner here, and he's just learning his way in this foreign country. Mm-hmm. So we were, like, exploring it together, and so that was really, really nice. And then also just, like, the emotional impact of, like, being somewhere so far from home and so different. And although, you know, I had people around me that I knew and all of that, it can be isolating to be, like, the one kind of oddball out of stuff. Like, you are just different, you're not from there, you don't understand everything, all of that. So
yeah, for sure,
having my dog there with me was really, really nice. It was a big hassle to make it happen, but it was totally worth it. So I was really glad that when I knew I was going, I was only planning to go there for a few years. And you know, some people are like, why don't you just leave your dog with someone? And I just couldn't imagine. I basically like think I couldn't have moved without him. So it was like, I'm figuring out how to make this work, or I'm not going, because I can't just ditch him for somebody else, like just to have him live somewhere
else. I was really, really, really glad that you had him to go with you, because I remember thinking, if I couldn't be there with you, if I wasn't going with
Toby,
you, and I couldn't be there, yeah, then Toby's that good of a friend.
Yeah. He was a really great friend. Yeah.
Even though our constant talking whenever we would hang out would completely annoy him, and he would let us know by letting out a huge, long sigh every time we stayed up a little bit too late, like past his bedtime, or if we were talking too much and he was annoyed by how we weren't like doing anything with him.
You could hear it from like across the house.
Yeah.
He'd just be looking at you sighing. Loved it. What a passive-aggressive little jerk. Yeah. So I don't have many more because he eventually got too old to like keep being alive, but he had a nice long life. He made it back to Texas with me. He made it moving to Dallas with me. And he basically died from just being an old, old guy with all white eyelashes and...
Oh, he was such a cute little old man.
Yeah, so he was really important to me that whole time. Basically, like, my 20s into my early 30s, he was there for me. Totally agree that dogs can be with you at the right time in your life to really help you through some tough things. And it's nice if they also needed somewhere to live and that you can give them that.
Yeah, because you adopted Toby, right?
From a rescue? I got him from the Beagle Rescue in Houston. He was found in Galveston, Texas.
Oh my gosh, I remember that because we used to joke about his life before you had him.
Yeah, like he was on like the beach with his family or something and he got lost, or I don't know. Yeah, we used to joke about how he was in Galveston.
Like, what was he doing before then? He can never tell you.
Yeah, I don't know. So he was found in Galveston and he ended up in a shelter. And then he was kind of like getting towards the end of how long they let them stay there before they put them down. And so then the Beagle Rescue sent someone to get him. And then they had him up in Houston. And I had planned to meet all these dogs. I was like looking at all the dogs they had. And I thought I knew what kind of, which dog I was interested in. And I was like, I'll go meet them at their foster homes. And he was the first one I went and met. I got there. He was like, the woman that was fostering him warned me she had like four beagles in her house other than him, so they were just running around like a wild pack of beagles whenever I got there. I can still remember them going in and out of the dog door, and they were just like howling and running everywhere, and I was like, holy crap, this is an intense...
That sounds terrible and adorable.
Yeah. So then she was like, here, take him outside like on his leash, like off on his own, so you can see what he's actually like not with this pack of wild beagles here. So we did, and I just walked him around, and I canceled all the other appointments to meet anyone else because I wanted him right away. He was just a great dog.
And didn't they say like if you took him home and it wasn't a good fit, like within a few days or a week or something, like you could.
Yeah, by then I was already approved to adopt from them. Just they had checked me out and thought like I wouldn't be a bad dog parent. But then, yeah, whenever you get them, it's like definitely like a trial run where they don't want you to go dump the dog somewhere else. They don't want you to have a long, like the dog and you to have a horrible time together. So there's like that window of like you're trying it out and can see if it's a good fit and then let them know. And if you keep the dog and
I really like that because there's this misconception with adopting a dog that you're just rolling the dice and you have no idea what you're going to get. And then you're going to be stuck with this dog that might be terrible and you can't take care of it. And then what do you do? So people just end up going to breeders because they're just like, I don't want to end up with whatever.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really get that because of course, like with a lot of dogs that you're rescuing, you can tell what kind of dog it is. So you can kind of get like a general idea of the likely temperament.
Yeah, just do your research.
A lot of times they're already adults. And so you can kind of see them as like, this is what the dog is like for the bulk of its life. It's not a puppy anymore. And then, yeah, whenever you get a dog from a rescue, they don't expect you to take it and just be like, well, you're stuck with it now. They're not trying to trick you into getting a bad dog. They want you to have a good fit with the dog because they want the dog to have a good life. And so
I think it's just a way to make yourself feel better about spending hundreds of dollars on a dog.
Yeah, I can see it like that's a way you can like legitimize that decision to yourself, saying like, justify it. I gave money to this breeder, so I know what I'm getting. But really, like you can definitely just try out a rescue dog and see, make sure they're a good fit for your family.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and a lot of things in a dog can be changed over time if they have different kinds of issues that.
Yeah, it's about the person.
You know, like if you get a dog and it's not housebroken yet, obviously you just do that. Although I was so glad that Toby came housebroken, I will say.
Yeah, that probably makes it much easier.
And yeah, it was nice because I can still remember the first night I had him. You don't know, like, what does this dog do when it needs to go to the bathroom? I don't know. And I just still remember him going over to the door and, like, scratching on it with his paw, like, just going on it. And, like, and I was like, okay, I think that's it. I let him out.
That's very nice and that's very clear.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's a good thing, too. Like, a lot of times when you adopt a dog, they already are aware of the basic commands, like sit, stay,
especially if you're getting
outside.
An adult dog. A lot of times they'll already have some of the stuff kind of built in. You don't want to do it. Like, they might be housebroken and they, you know, have some, like, medical stuff taken care of. They know, like, yeah, he already knew how to sit and stay and he was already leash trained, all that. That's really nice. So you can just build on top of that and just focus on developing your relationship with your dog. Yeah. But you don't have to worry about them constantly, like, peeing all over your house. That's a really big bonus as far as I'm concerned.
Going back to living in Houston and the way that they do dog rescue and dog adoption, if there is a dog in a shelter after a certain point, they do put the dog down, which is very sad because there's just not enough room to care for all of the dogs.
Yeah.
But I now live in Austin, which is a no-kill city, which I didn't really realize what that meant until I came to Austin because I thought that that just meant that when they're picking up dogs on the road, they're not immediately like euthanizing them. But what it really means is that there's no killing of dogs at any of the shelters. So they just keep the dogs indefinitely. And then just put all of their resources toward really, really pushing dog adoption and trying to find homes for the dogs or relocating the dogs. And the only reasons that they euthanize if the dog has like
major
a debilitating medical condition and they're dying anyway. Yeah.
So like at first, when you first hear it, you think that sounds like a good idea. But then when I imagine like, what if all of their initiatives to adopt all the dogs out doesn't get enough of them a home and then...
Which it never does.
Are they just staying in like a shelter environment for their whole lives without a family?
Yeah. And that, to me, is much, much sadder than some dog that might be 3 or 4 years old and it's been in a shelter for like a year and a half and not adopted and they euthanize it. Like, that, to me, is sad that that happens because the pet population has gotten out of control. But the reason that that's happening is because the pet population is out of control.
Yeah, it seems like putting effort towards spaying and neutering pets and making sure people are doing that is
right.
Important.
Like educating people to be better dog owners and to understand what it means to get your dog fixed and why to get the pet population under control. And then we don't have like thousands of animals just living out their entire lives in a cage.
Yeah, I cannot watch that commercial with like the Sarah McLachlan song where it's like the dogs are all in the cage. It's like I cannot handle that. I have to change the channel or I'll literally like pause the TV sometimes so I can fast forward past it because I'll start crying if I accidentally watch it.
It always confuses me why their angle is like, let's make you super, super sad and depressed, and then you'll want to have a dog.
Yeah.
It's like, why don't you show me like them being super cute and not all like scraggly and wet? Like, they
looking so sad. Actually, I remember now that reminded me of whenever I met Toby, they told me that he was probably like around 3-ish years old. And I remember her telling me that he had been in the shelter for like a few months. I think they had a 90-day cutoff at that point. So he was like approaching that, which is why they went and got him because no one had come and claimed him and no one had adopted him from them or anything. She said that he was really, really loud in there, and that she figured that probably contributed to why he didn't get adopted, because he was doing that like beagle howling kind of like, so it was like, oh, I can't bring that to my house. But then whenever I got him to my house, I didn't hear him make a noise for like 3 or 4 months.
I was gonna say, he was so quiet.
Yeah, he was so quiet. Yeah, he was a really quiet dog. So he was just like having like a lot of stress and anxiety being in that shelter. So it made him seem like a really like dog that just barks and howls constantly. Mm-hmm. But then the reality was, when he got to my house, he would just like nap and hang out and try to like steal my french fries.
Remember when he stole my Chick-fil-A sandwich? We were sitting at your coffee table,
and we had
just gotten our Chick-fil-A out to eat, and I turned around. I didn't even get up. Like, you went into your kitchen, and I turned, and I came back, and Toby had my sandwich just in his mouth.
Had nonchalantly done a walk by.
Like, completely still.
He wouldn't, like, jump up. Like, no paws on the coffee table or anything. He would just, like, do, like, a walk by and just steal it slowly.
And he would tilt his head and just, like, put the food in his mouth and just walk away.
Keep it calm. Keep it calm.
And I remember our eyes met, and I was like, Toby!
This is mine. Now, Kim. He stole a steak that my sister had once on our coffee table as well. The coffee table was just like his area.
Well, it was low. It was like his level. Yeah, he kind of acted, we kind of had this moment where he was acting like he was gonna like just put it down and act like it didn't happen. But I was like, dude, it's in your mouth now. Like, it's yours.
It's yours now.
I'm not just gonna like cover it in Chick-fil-A sauce and eat it now. Like, yeah.
No. Like, it's yours now, you little jerk. So remember a few years ago, or I guess it's like several years ago by now, but whenever I had this picture of Toby that I put on Flickr where he's wearing a party hat. It's from a birthday party like 10 years ago, my husband's birthday.
Yes.
And I had it on Flickr. So last week I got a message on Flickr from someone asking for permission to use the photo in an upcoming party themed book for a small publisher. And this picture is just like classic Toby with a party hat on, which means he does not look thrilled. He looks like bored and kind of like put out, and also like, why is this on my head?
Yeah, it almost looks like he just got done rolling his eyes because he hates partying so much.
He's like not into partying at all. And so a few years ago, like several years ago, I had it on Flickr, and over time I would notice, like, I would get these like little alerts where people were using the photo. So random blogs, or one time it was on like an Earth Day celebration thing, several like local news websites would post. There was around 1 year he was like on a lot of New Year's posts where it was like he was celebrating the New Year, I guess, in his birthday hat. I took screenshots of a bunch of them as it was happening whenever I would notice, and saved them on my Flickr because I just thought it was so funny. I'd always share them with Kim because I can remember taking the picture. Yeah, it was definitely like right after he sighed. So it was just really funny whenever that picture.
I remember getting a message from you like really frequently at that time that, oh my gosh, another
it was really popular for a little while there, where it was like, he's on this blog, he's on this like Earth Day thing, he's on this New Year's Eve thing, he was all over. So it just reminded me the other day, because last week I got that message on Flickr about someone asking to use it. So I was.
He will never stop reluctantly partying around the world.
I think I'm going to give them permission to use it. And they said they would send me a copy of the book, because I just think it'd be really funny if there's just like Toby not looking like he wants to party in like a party themed book about how to have a good party. Anyway, I'll put the picture in the show notes because it's really funny and you can't miss it.
I can only hope that my eventual dog that we'll have once we have space for it is as cool and as photogenic as Toby.
Same here. It's like he's kind of the reason why we don't have another dog yet.
Yeah, it sets a really high bar.
Now we don't have one just because we're renovating our house, and so it would be kind of hard to deal with a dog. I think Toby would handle it fine, but I can't count on every other dog knowing to stay out of your construction zone constantly.
Mm-hmm.
I do kind of imagine in my future a house with some more land around it and like a lot of animals. You know, I want a rude goat.
Goats.
And I want like a little donkey, I think, like a rescue. If I can find a donkey that just like really needs a home, I can imagine. Yeah. And then some dogs mixed in there. I could just see having a lot of them. So, but if a goat will just like parkour off my dog, it'll just be like a dream come true for me.
That's such a specific dream. At this point, we're just shooting to have enough space for a dog, which I came across an article recently that said that millennials are buying homes more and more, because for a while there, you know, it was like, millennials aren't getting married, they're not having kids, they're not buying homes, millennials aren't doing anything, and society's going to collapse because millennials refuse to live. This was just saying that, no, millennials are doing those things, but their motivations are just different, and we're living in a different world. So millennials are buying their first home mostly motivated by getting a dog and having space for having a dog. Yeah, I read this and I was like, it's me.
Like, that makes sense. Yeah.
25% of millennials are getting their first house because of a marriage, and 19% because of the birth of a child. But 33% are getting their first house because it's a better space and a yard for a dog.
That's amazing. I love it.
Yeah. I love it too. And that's, I mean, something to shoot for. That's what we're working toward right now. So I always wonder when I read articles like this am I a millennial? Because I was born in 1981, and sometimes I get lumped into the Gen Xers, and sometimes I'm a millennial. But I think I identify mostly with what millennials have going on.
Yeah, we're like right in the edge there, so there's something. But I do think a lot of the stuff, yeah, identify. And I do feel like irritated when they're constantly getting like crapped on, so I feel like that must mean maybe
yeah,
I'm in the
me
group,
too.
And I'm just like, ugh, stop.
We're either old millennials or young Gen Xers, but I think old millennial is a thing too, because we're definitely different than the younger.
Yeah, I don't know how to use Snapchat.
We identify with articles like this that talk about millennials and how life is changing for them and we have different motivations.
But we've never used an app to date.
Yeah. And we don't use Snapchat. But then we also fall into the Gen X category of being retargeted constantly for reboots and resurrections of old things.
Yes.
Like, did you see recently that Hulu is releasing TGIF, all of the TGIF Friday shows?
Yes. So I thought that was like kind of funny whenever I heard it and like, oh, that's fun. But then when I thought of like, who is sitting down and rewatching all of Full House or something.
It's Full House, Family Matters, Perfect Strangers, and Step by Step. There's no Boy Meets World or Dinosaurs because those are Disney properties.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I can clearly remember that like Friday night TGIF watching Full House and Step by Step and Family mm-hmm. Matters. We would often get pizza. And this habit is the reason that whenever I hear pizza, I often want to say pizza, pizza, because back then Little Caesars would always say
Little
pizza,
Caesars,
pizza.
Yes.
We would get Little Caesars pizza because they had this huge rectangle pizza, like this big,
the huge rectangle that would feed everyone.
No matter how many friends I had over, mm-hmm. members of our family would come by, like we would have enough pizza for everyone, and then we would just have it left over if there weren't that many people there. It was fine. But we would get that pizza on Friday nights and then watch mm-hmm. TGIF like at 7 p.m.
And breadsticks. We always got like an extra order.
Yes, the breadsticks. Yeah, sauce. Same. We were doing the same thing. We just weren't together yet.
Oh,
yeah. So like, I loved that. And I watched it, you know, every week when it was on. It was like that was my family would watch that together. And it was, I mean, I always did, but I just can't really imagine going into Hulu and being like, hey, Step by Step, what's up? I'm going to watch all of you right now.
Yeah. It's like, are we supposed to go back and rewatch?
Is it for new people to watch it or am I supposed to watch
it? Yeah, I don't know. It's 800 episodes.
Like, I feel like new people who didn't know about it back then or who were too young or weren't alive yet or whatever, they're going to watch it. And like, nobody has a cell phone. It's weird. Like what all most mm-hmm. of, if you watch some of those older shows, a lot of times the conflict could just be resolved if they could have just like made a phone call easily from their location. Like even some of the like older Buffy seasons where it's like they can't get a hold of Buffy because for a while she got that beeper and like then they're like trying to beep her, like they're trying to
Buffy needed a cell phone so bad.
And a lot of the times it was like, oh no, like the world is in peril. And if they could have just freaking called Buffy on the phone and let her know, it would have been easier and things would have been handled more quickly. But it all spirals out of control because they can't get in contact with each other quickly. All they need was a phone. And I feel like a lot of shows from then and earlier, if they would have just had a phone, the conflict just like goes away.
Yeah, I feel like maybe a younger generation might check these shows out just out of curiosity, just to see what was up with TGIF back in the 90s.
Now I kind of want, oh gosh, now I like almost talked myself into watching so I can see how many episodes in a row I can watch where the conflict could be solved with a cell phone and making a note of it. That might be like a project. I'm starting a blog. It's going to be called Thank God I Have a Cell Phone. TGICP.
HACP. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. There's
it
there,
just
yeah.
rolls off the tongue. I also recently saw that because NBC is resurrecting Will and Grace and they started filming it, and it seems to already be a huge hit, even though they don't even have any episodes.
Is it just the original? It's not like a reboot with new people. It's the same people, right?
It's the same cast. Yeah.
And do you know if it's supposed to jump in time where it's like current time?
I don't. I think because this all started because they recorded that promotion when the presidential election was going on.
Yeah.
And they ran that, I think it was like 10-minute clip, and it went viral and people loved it, and it was in current time. So I think because that was what was so popular and started getting this going, that they're just going to pick back up with them being in current time still. But then I feel like that's weird because Will and Grace wouldn't still live together.
Yeah, but did they still live together by the end of the show? I feel like something happened.
Oh, I don't know. I don't remember.
I don't know. But yeah, if they still live together, it's like, whoa, your life has been like pretty stunted. Like, what are you doing?
So it might just pick up where they left off and just pretend like they're not older, which I think is kind of funny, actually. So I don't know. They figured it out. They just haven't announced how they're doing it yet.
Yeah.
They're doing Will and Grace, and then NBC just riding high on this new like reboot.
Is it really a reboot if it's just like, here's a new season of the same people? It's just like another season with a really long delay.
Rebooting, I think, is if it's a different cast and it's the same concept.
Yeah. So what else is NBC trying to do now?
They're trying to bring back The Office and 30 Rock as well. But I don't think it's actually going to happen. I think they're just talking
about it.
I'm so confused
by that. We already did that. Like, we already watched that.
Yeah. So I feel like we're going to be watching Will and Grace followed by The Office and 30 Rock on Thursday night. Which we did that like 15 years ago.
I don't get the obsession with constantly just redoing the same ideas. Even if it is a reboot where it's like totally different actors and the story's going in a different place, like a lot of times I feel like it's pretty unnecessary and they're just writing on like the name of something that already was popular. Mm-hmm. And that, and like, I guess it kind of gives the same people a chance to have a show again. Why can't new people with new ideas be in charge of
a show? There are so many people out there with fresh new ideas, different perspectives, and so many different kinds of people that we need to like give more of a platform to make shows.
Right.
That it's completely unnecessary.
So why are we cycling through the same ones? Yeah.
Which something that I thought was interesting when I was reading about TGIF, I was sort of remembering watching a lot of different shows that centered around Black characters or Black families. But I feel like that's something that maybe was really positive about everybody watching the same stuff and having network TV that we don't have anymore.
Yeah, there were fewer options. And so I felt like everybody around my age or like the families with kids around my age were watching that same TGIF thing with Family Matters on there. And
yeah, like Sister Sister and like Hanging with Mr. Cooper.
Yeah, I watched all those.
I even remember later watching like Rock and watching Martin like on Fox. Like Fox had all those. Living Single was such a great show.
Yeah.
Living Single. There were just so many. Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, of course. Like, yeah, everybody watched that. And so I do feel like it was sort of this odd shift from like a time that we think of as having less diversity, but there was more diversity in the mainstream, I think, for a lot of people, or at least like me, like growing up in sort of like a middle working class family.
Yeah, because now there are so many things you don't feel like basically like quote unquote everyone is watching something, because everyone just has like, they might not have cable, or they have Hulu, or they have Netflix, or they use Amazon, or it's like, mm-hmm. what system do they use to stream stuff, or what do they even watch? And so there's not really as much of a kind of critical mass around like every Friday night everyone at my school, with few exceptions, mm-hmm. was probably watching at least some sort of TGIF. Yeah, and Saturday morning cartoons.
Yeah, and like Saved by the Bell.
You would watch the same batch of cartoons, and then yeah, like I watched Saved by the Bell. And then Saved by the Bell, they even reran it like before school. Mm-hmm. And that would be, I would wake up and like turn that on and watch an episode.
Yes. I woke up at like 6 a.m. to watch Saved by the Bell before the bus.
Yeah. I would watch it while I was eating my breakfast.
Mm-hmm, me too. Now we're like 35 talking about these like shared experiences that we had as kids, even before we knew each other. And I feel like people growing up nowadays don't really have that same.
Yeah. It won't be as likely that they'll have an overlap there, because there's just so many options now.
Yeah.
I wonder if there was just like a time where there were more kind of, I guess, mostly like sitcoms centered around Black characters or Black families, or if that was just network and so it felt like that, but they're still out there, but they're just spread out further, and so it's not as obvious. Mm-hmm. Because I can't really, although I really can't think of that many examples right now. Like, obviously Black-ish is a really big popular example, but I can't really think of.
Mm-hmm. And there are dramas, like a lot of the Shondaland shows and stuff. There are dramas,
yeah.
I think, that center around Black characters, but not so much that like family.
The family dynamic, yeah. Like the whole style family. Yeah. Yeah, that is different. I wonder.
And we've talked about this before. People aren't watching the same shows at the same time either. So there's not this like shared experience online of people talking about shows at the same time and joining conversations and getting involved all at once. And you never really know when people are watching. I mean, of course, like every Sunday night, like people on Twitter will talk about Game of Thrones and things like that, but it's not as frequent. And if you can't catch the show at that exact time, you miss out on that conversation, which is something that's gotten lost too, like the sort of shared experience of going to school the next day after having watched something the evening before and talking to your friends about it, or knowing that like you can invite your friends over to watch TGIF and have pizza and they're all going to want to watch those same shows because we're all into them at the time.
Yeah.
So
that's true. Yeah. It's interesting to be old enough now to be in the age range where the stuff that you liked as a kid is like either being like offered like Hulu, you know, getting those shows and putting them on there for streaming, or even totally rebooted or relaunched in some way, where the stuff that you think of as being something you were into as a kid or a teenager or even in your 20s, and now we're old enough to be seeing that redone. But then,
yeah, I guess it's nice to be able to revisit certain things if you want, but we shouldn't be making it this huge announcement. Like, Hulu's really going after a wide audience with these TGIF shows.
I'm still really curious who's going to watch all those. Like,
who do they think? Why is this something that they're putting? Because they're really trying to grow their platform.
Maybe people around our age with kids who want to like tell their kids to watch it, but then are they like forcing their kids to watch Full House? I don't know.
So that reminds me of something I wanted to get your thoughts on. Do you think that within these shows, Full House, Perfect Strangers, Family Matters, and Step by Step, revisiting them and watching them now, do you think that there are a lot of problematic or offensive elements going on that
Absolutely.
We may not have realized as a kid?
Basically, anytime I rewatch something that I'm like, oh, I loved that as a kid, almost every time you're like, holy crap, that was like super homophobic. Like you'll hear some joke that they make and you're like, whoa, that would not fly now. Or there'll be something really sexist that just didn't jump out because it's like, that's what women are like back then. Or something like where it's like that racist where it's like you kind of try and like hide it or pretend it wasn't racist, but it definitely was that you weren't acknowledging back then, that kind of stuff. Yeah, those shows and movies from that time are full of that. Or like all the stereotypes, like the depiction of Asian characters in the 90s, especially like...
Or the lack of.
Yeah, and then when they were there, it would be like, can you like play up this like accent that makes you sound like not American or whatever, even if you totally are and this character's supposed to be? Just all these weird kind of like not very woke depictions of stuff.
Or just not mentioning things at all, like talking around racism or oppression. And if they did address it, it was a very special episode.
Yeah, like a very special episode of white people learning what it's like.
Right. They know so many people are watching, so they're trying to at least address important issues, which I guess it's good, you know, that you're getting exposure to that somewhere if you're in the mainstream and you are watching these shows. But at the same time, it was consistently glossed over on so many of these shows. All these important issues were never, ever addressed. And instead, we got like these homophobic jokes, like what you
were
saying.
Or there's just, yeah, all those little jokes, like little one-off lines where they in the 90s or early 2000s even some of that stuff will just like pass you by, but then or when you're a little kid, so you're just you're not really aware of that kind of stuff as much, and then when you go back to it you realize how pervasive it is all throughout the entire show and every episode. And
Perfect Strangers is built around the idea that Balki Bartakamus is coming to America, played by somebody who's doing an accent the whole time from some, I think it's a country that doesn't exist, isn't it?
Or yeah, I think it might
be. I might be wrong about that, but I feel like they made up a country.
Or at least it's like a caricature kind of thing, yeah. It might be real, like in the sense where Garfield constantly mailed Odie to Abu Dhabi and then we never got any more information on it. So you just think like, is that a real place? And you figure out it is, but like, it's not really relevant to Garfield.
I actually didn't figure out it was. I always thought Abu Dhabi was a fake place. I mean, eventually, of course, I knew. Yeah. But as a kid, I never, ever
thought
that
was. I thought it
was
too, until I think I asked my mom one time and then she like didn't know. We found out. Yeah, so I feel like even if it was a real place, it was just not like a real connection to it. Just some.
Yeah,
like,
and I just remember laughing at Balki and finding Balki super funny as a kid because the joke was that he was foreign.
Yeah.
Like, that was the whole joke. Like, he didn't know things, and he had an accent, and that's just not, that's not cool. Like, just to, like, have this this foreign character be, like, the whole joke.
The joke is just how he doesn't fit in, and he's foreign, and you're laughing.
Yeah, so, in a sense, I'm like, really, do we need, like, younger generation experience?
Did they ever have a very special episode where he almost got deported, or he had, like, green card issues? I wonder.
I don't know. That, I mean, that would have been the very special episode of that show.
Yeah, like, some kind of, like, you're at risk of not being able to stay here after all this work of trying to learn how to live here.
I don't remember. If they did, I would imagine it was more about like him having to get married to stay in the country.
Yeah, like some joke about like finding someone to marry, like fake marry. Yeah.
Or Larry would put on a dress and it would be some really transphobic.
Oh my gosh. So, okay. We don't know if that actually happened. Don't try and like pin some sort of transphobic episode on them that didn't even actually happen. Although it does feel totally possible for the time period.
For that time. Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't know if I'm on board with all these like bringing up the old stuff to watch, because I even struggle with older movies sometimes, like, so I mean, other than just visually they're kind of like horrifying to watch sometimes, it makes me feel like my glasses aren't working because they're so blurry, but if I can get over that, sometimes I just have trouble with the stories and the character depictions and all that, where it's just hard for me to watch some of them because they're just not current.
Yeah, and that's not to say that that kind of stuff doesn't pop up in movies now, because it does all the time sometimes. I'm like shocked by a movie that came out like
this
year.
There has been progress. Actually, I was recently, I think I told you this, but recently I was watching, I kept seeing, like, so I've been watching Big Brother for the summer because, like, you know, summer TV. I decided to watch it again after not watching it for, like, I don't know, 10 years or more. But as I was watching it, I kept seeing people say that, like, Big Brother 10, which happened in, like, 2007 or 2008 or something, was the best season of all time or had one of the best players of all time on it. And so I was really curious, like, what makes a Big Brother season, like, stand out as... You're always remembering this one guy.
What year was season 10?
2007, 2008, I think, around then. So I just watched a few episodes of it like that were on CBS All Access, since I pay for that subscription now after having to give in and watch The Good Fight. And then that's why I watch Big Brother now. So I didn't want to encourage other channels to have a pay subscription, so I'm paying for every separate little thing, but... Mm-hmm. The Good Fight was totally worth it. So if you're on the fence and you might want to watch it, I say it's worth the money because it's an excellent show. Anyway, so, but then you might accidentally start watching Big Brother and then like old seasons of Big Brother and it's a whole big problem. Anyways, so I started watching a few episodes of this Big Brother season to see what like the fuss was all about, because I current Big Brother watchers constantly reference it in tweets and stuff. So I was like, I don't know what's going on here. This whole talk reminded me of it because there was a guy on there who is supposed to be a great player. I don't see it yet, but we'll see what happens. No one spoil it. It's like 10 years old. he was Catholic and there was a gay housemate in there, and he mentioned, like, he was asking the guy about being gay, or like if he, how he knew he was gay, or if his family knew he was gay, and all these different things. And then he actually said, like, I've never really known a gay person. So, and he was kind of saying, like, that's why I'm asking these questions, and like, I'm glad that I'm getting the chance to. And then it was like opening his eyes, and I was thinking, man, 10 years ago really was just different. Like, I don't think there are many people now that would say they've never met, or like, they don't know a gay person, like one gay person, really.
Yeah, that makes me wonder, though, if he had met people who were gay and he just wasn't aware.
Yeah, I'm sure he had met someone that was gay, but he just didn't know. And they didn't feel comfortable maybe letting him know they were gay, whether they were out in general or not, because he was also Catholic and I think works at a Catholic school or something. So, or they might not have been out all the way, you know, completely anyways. But either way, in his mind, he hadn't interacted with anyone that was gay before, although I feel like he for sure had. He just didn't know. And so he was asking this guy, and then he eventually says, like, when I think of him, like, I don't think of, like, you know, he's gay, this gay guy. I think of him as just, like, my friend, this guy. And I was like, I mean, good for you. You don't instantly think about how he's gay every time you think of him, but... Yeah, I mean, he didn't go. I was worried it was going to be like they're going to cut to the diary room and he's going to say something super homophobic, but he didn't. He only just really said like he was learning a lot and he'd never spent any time with a gay person, that he thought of that person as his friend now, and it was waking him up to some stuff. So hopefully 10 years later, he's much further along the path of that and it hasn't like gone in the total wrong direction. I don't feel like someone would say that on Big Brother now or just like really anything. It would be really hard to find someone that was that sheltered or unaware of gay people in general. But yeah, it just reminded me of like progress. It felt like progress.
Yeah, so that was 2007 and we've made some progress since then, and hopefully we will continue to make progress and not keep stepping back into shows from, you know, 25 years ago.
Yeah, and I mean, it would be great if like 10 years, I mean, I don't even want to wait 10 years for this, but if 10 years from now it could be like you're seeing some of the stuff that's going on around trans people right now, like with the trans bathroom bills or just general transphobic kind of comments, behavior, whatever, and be like, oh, I can't imagine people were ever like that. They'd never met a trans person or they said that. Yeah, and like, I really hope that that will be.
I think that's really the issue, like with you saying, like, why do we keep revisiting these things? Maybe it's good to revisit some things because you can say, like, oh, look at how much progress we've made and how homophobic or transphobic that sounds to me.
I mean,
now,
but if you're modern day homophobic and you're watching like a show from the 90s that's homophobic, I feel like you're only just hearing the stuff that you want, which is reinforcing your homophobia.
Right. If there's no conversation around it and you're just releasing it saying, oh, let's romanticize this and make it about nostalgia. Yeah.
Yeah.
So when you're making your notes about how much everyone on Full House needed a cell phone, also jot down all the homophobic
I'm rewatching TGIF shows, I'll have to watch it and I'll have to watch for like problems that can be solved with cell phones and then like what kind of problematic jokes they make. I don't know what my blog can be called though with that combination of stuff.
TGIFHACOYC.
Coming soon. .com.
That's it for this episode of Hey Bestie. You can find show notes and links to everything we talked about on heybestie.com. Don't forget to like, rate, and review us on iTunes. We appreciate it. Thank you so much and have a great week. Do they use cats? Are there therapy cats?
I don't know. I mean, I feel like there's therapy like all sorts of different kinds of animals now, but I'm not sure a cat is cut out for that kind of work.